It's the Commute with Carlson, and it's Lars Larson standing in for JC. 888-312-5757. Email talk at LarsLarson.com.
Will you bring me a gun, please?
Everybody knows Lars loves guns.
I'm a citizen with a constitutional right to bear arms.
And he also loves the Second Amendment. Let's face it, America isn't America without guns.
All right, that does it. It's time to bring out the big gun.
Protecting your right to bear arms every day. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Well, the news today seems to be loaded with a bunch of different stories involving the Second Amendment, the rights of American citizens, and as you know, I have a dog in the fight. I am a member of a number of gun groups. I own pistols and rifles. I use them lawfully and legally, and I support the right of other people to do that. And on the phone with me right now is the senior editor of TheGunMag.com, Dave Workman, also a reporter for Examiner.com. Dave, good to have you on the commute with Carlson.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Lars. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I want to make the best use of our time. Let's start with the shooting of the Seattle bus driver. Thank God he's going to recover safely. Thank God the cops plugged the bad guy and ended the threat against those people on the second bus the man was running toward. How long is it going to be before politicians in Washington State and Seattle in particular try to take advantage of this situation?
Well, it looks like the people who are pushing the gun control initiative, Initiative 594, have already started taking advantage of it over on their Facebook page, and that's the Washington Alliance for Gun Responsibility. And there's always been a question if they know anything about gun responsibility, but the shooting itself. Textbook example of good guys responding real fast. They were on this guy. The whole thing went down in about 7 minutes. Police were there on the scene almost immediately, and including, from what I understand from reports, Nick Metz, who's an assistant police chief, he was even involved in this thing. And it's so seldom that you get to see a ranking police official get involved in something like this, and you know, good for Nick. He was on the spot. I had a chance to meet him in Olympia in I think it was January, February, and a good guy.
Good deal.
So,
well,
yeah,
well,
and
but how about Mike McGinn? Do you think the mayor's going to jump into this as well because he's not a gun lover?
Yeah, I anticipate that McGinn's going to figure out some way to exploit this. He needs a campaign issue. Because he's going to be in a pretty tough race against Senator Ed Murray. And, yeah, Seattle's got a choice. They have an uber-liberal and an uber-liberal with senatorial experience. So.
And a socialist. Don't forget to throw the socialist. I was talking yesterday, and I hope people didn't take it personally, but, my God, what is a conservative, even a moderate conservative, like a McCain conservative, which is not really a conservative, what does a moderate conservative in Seattle do when his choice is an uber-liberal, or a socialist for mayor?
I think what he does is he spends his Sundays praying for the big earthquake. And
I'm not going to wish you a lot. You know, I love the city of Seattle. My mom and dad used to live at Mount Rainier National Park when I was a little kid, and my dad was a park ranger, and we'd occasionally come into Seattle and tell you how old I am. I still remember going to the World's Fair in Seattle when they put the Space Needle up. And so
I was at the World's Fair when I was a kid, too.
I have fond memories of going there. My wife and I come up at least a few times a year. Hey, let me ask you about this second issue. Bellingham, Washington, the city of Bellingham is going to have to pay $15,000 to a retired U.S. Army Master Sergeant because their cops didn't know the rules. And this 64-year-old man was just walking through the park, and a cop came up to him and said, it's illegal for you to have a gun in the park. And apparently the retired master sergeant knew the laws better than the cop did. And he said, no, it's not. I'll show you a copy of the law. And the police officer draws down on him.
Well, this isn't the first time that some Bellingham police officer has run afoul of state law or state constitutional protections. Back in 2009, and I wrote about this in my book that a lot of people have out there, Washington State Gun Rights and Responsibilities. A guy named Robert Stratton was walking down St. Mick's Way in Bellingham. and he was stopped by a cop. This whole thing, it escalated. Stratton did file a legal claim. He collected an undisclosed amount of money. Bellingham.
Are they just slow learners or what? Are they just slow learners? Are they just slow learners up there? I mean, you have it happen once, and at that point, at the next roll call, because, see, I love the cops, and I think most of the time they're right on. But when they screw up, they got to get it fixed. So how is it they have this happen, and then a while later, they do it over again, and it costs the city 15 G's?
Well, you know, that's a question I think the whole open carry community and the gun rights community in general would like to know the answer to. You know, it's too bad because you're right. Most of the police officers and certainly the sheriff's deputies in Washington State, I know a lot of these guys, they're fully aware that it is absolutely legal, A, to carry a firearm in a park, B, to open carry. If you're open carrying in a peaceable manner, you've done nothing wrong. And this is one of those situations where occasionally you got to whack somebody upside the head with a $15,000 2x4 to make them pay attention.
And then you've got Mill Creek, which had banned guns in the parks for a decade, but now they've said, oh, guess what? They're probably unconstitutional, so we should get rid of those bans. They've had them on the books but haven't enforced them for 3 or 4 years, and I guess Snohomish County got rid of its ban as well. It just seems as though these folks, you know, if this had something to do with a transgender person in a school, if it had something to do with somebody who's gay, somebody who's black, somebody who's Hispanic, somebody who's liberal or a liberal cause, boy, they'd be all over it in a second. But when it has to do with Second Amendment rights, they don't seem to be very anxious to correct the situation quickly.
Well, Lars, I think you've pegged it. For a lot of people, especially people in government and the media, the Second Amendment is, let's say it's the leper colony of the Bill of Rights, and they don't really care to talk about this. Fortunately, in the Seattle area, I think a lot of the press, and I'm going to give myself a pat on the back, I put a lot of work into doing this.
And we appreciate
it. I am a card-carrying member of the press. I worked with these guys, explained the issues to them, and they do pay attention to this sort of thing. But Mill Creek is one more of those little tiny victories for Alan Gottlieb and the Second Amendment Foundation. SAF has sent letters out to dozens of communities as a result of a little survey they did here about a year and a half ago. We checked, we meaning SAF, because the gun mag is owned by SAF, so I work for them ultimately. But SAF sent letters out to a lot of these communities, told them, hey, we have checked your ordinance books. We found that, hey, you've got this ordinance dating back to 1974, 1968.
Dave,
yeah.
I hate to say it. Hold that thought for a second. We're up against a break. It is The Commute
right.
with John Carlson. Lars Larson with you, standing in for John, taking your calls. If you're a naysayer, you go first. 888-312-5757 on KVI. And on the phone with me right now, but we're going to take some calls at the same time, is the senior editor at, what is it, Dave, again? It's
thegunmag.com. Thegunmag.com. It used to be Gun Week, but about a year and a half ago, well, almost 2 years ago, we went from a weekly format to a monthly news magazine format. And it really is the news magazine of gun information out there, so.
Well, listen, we're glad to take some calls, but I wanted you to be able to finish that thought, and then we'll go to some of our callers and see what they've got on their mind. Maybe we'll get a naysayer who says that citizens shouldn't own guns, or, you know, the cops shouldn't have shot the bad guy who shot the bus driver this week, or city parks should be off limits. I mean, I just love talking to the naysayers because logic and the law seem to fly out the window when we do that, but it's always entertaining. So if they want to do it, it's 888-312-5757. But you were about to say, as we were heading into the break.
Yeah, I was about to say that naysayers are fun because it's like dueling with an unarmed man. But
but you know, I love the fact. See, for 17 years in talk radio full time and 10 years in national syndication, I always put the naysayers first because I want my audience to get the benefit. And some of my conservative friends say, why do you even put those folks on the air? And I said, because you need to listen to their arguments, good or bad, and you need to have an answer to every single issue they bring up. And if you don't, you're not being a good conservative, and you're not being true to the issue. If you know the issue well, you should know both sides' arguments as well as, you know, one side as the other, and be able to answer those questions. So let's go to John in Bainbridge Island. Let's keep Dave on the line. John, welcome to the commute with Carlson. Lars Larson standing in for him. What's on your mind, John?
Well, Mr. Larson, yeah, I wanted to point out that there was an event where a stray bullet left a gun range on Bainbridge Island. I've lived there about 13 years, I'd say somewhere in the last 10 years or so. At the Sportsman's Club on Sportsman's Club Road in Bainbridge, one or more rounds was found lodged in some nearby houses. And
did they fix the problem?
Oh, yeah. It was fixed quietly and quickly. They restricted use of the range and corrected the problem, whether it was some crossbeams or some bermage. I can't remember what the problem was, but it was rectified. It was in the Bainbridge Island Review. It was discussed from time to time with without any controversy.
And there you go. So what do you think of Pierce County standing up and saying, number one, the gun ranges were there first. Number two, they do a good job. If they have millions of rounds fired every year and they have no untoward events or an untoward event, you know, every decade or two that they then go correct, that sounds like a better safety record than almost any industry you can name.
Isn't that the way it's supposed to be, sir? I mean, I'm a member of Poulsville Sportsman's. I belong to Poulsville Sportsman's Club. I waited 6 months in line to get a slot as a member, and you know, the Kitsap County clubs have had some lawsuits and some other court issues to deal with in order to establish their right to remain. But as you say, the towns grow around the clubs, so the people who move in don't really have any much room to complain.
John, thanks for the call. Let's go to a different John, this one from Auburn. Hey, John, welcome to the commute with Carlson. Lars Larson with you this morning.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I just a couple of comments. You know, I think that the Second Amendment supporters have been doing a good job over the years. I mean, there's more states with right to carry, et cetera, but I think there's a couple of tactics that we're missing.
All right.
And we talk a lot in generalities about gun ownership and things like that where, you know, Second Amendment, blah, blah, blah. But I think that the public, the non-caring public, the people who need to be educated, they get to the specifics. And the specifics the anti-gun lobby uses are these major events where some crazy does something that's not so great,
yep,
and it's used as a lever. And I think that we, especially people like you that have the access and have the stories, just like the NRA's tried to do, but in a broader context, we've got to get the stories out where legal, law-abiding citizens have averted crime, saved lives, and quite frankly, more of us have got to exercise our carry rights, and we need stories where we're in the right place at the right time, and people can see that there's actually a benefit, and the original benefit that the founders really intended for that Second Amendment, which was protecting ourselves.
Well said. Now, let me tell you how I answer that. Number one, I carry every day unless I have to fly in an airplane, because I don't fly private, I fly commercial, so I don't get to carry on airplanes, but I carry at all other times. When my wife and I went on a road trip last summer, we drove about 4,000 miles around America, saw some amazing places, and I carried in every state I could legally carry in it, and in those it was not legal to carry in, I did the proper thing and stored it, you know, per that state's laws, and I did my research. I agree with you that we should make sure those get out. What we need is friends in law enforcement, because they're the ones that, for the most part, will be aware of those that rise to the level of the attention of law enforcement. So when a local police department has a self-defense situation, I want them to, they put out press releases on everything else. Well, not everything else. They don't put out a press release on every arrest they make or every incident they respond to. But it would be great to encourage those folks, and maybe through the city councils. You know, you go to your local city council in Auburn and say, hey, could we ask politely the police chief if he would make sure that when these things come to his attention, incidents of self-defense, that the police department send out a press release and publicize it? Doesn't mean it'll always be published. Then you get on the phone and you call KVI and you call your favorite TV news outfit and the ones that aren't your favorites and say, hey, this happened down there. Why don't you do a story on it? Because the argument they'll have back is, well, we don't do a story on everything. And why is that news? And you say, well, tell you what, if a kid falls in Puget Sound off a boat and some other boat rescues him, you'll do a story on it. If a kid falls in a stream somewhere, you'll do a story on it. If a kid is rescued off Mount Rainier or out of a park on the peninsula, you'll do a story on it. So why is it not a story when a homeowner or a shop owner successfully defends himself. And here's the other thing I always throw out, and I don't know if you've heard me mention this, John, but there's a Department of Justice study, not state, but federal, and it was done about a dozen years ago. I send the link to anybody who asks for it, but it is not coming from the NRA. It's not coming from the Second Amendment Foundation or a right-wing nut like me. It's coming from the U.S. Department of Justice, and it estimates that the number of what they call DGUs, defensive gun uses by civilians every year, is between 2 and 4 million times a year. And if people wonder, well, how can it happen that often and not be in the news? The answer is, if your wife or your sister is walking out of a store late at night, going home from a movie late at night, and some creep comes up and tries to assault her, and she pulls a pistol out and points it at him, and he goes away, chances are she may call the cops and say, be aware, this creep tried to assault me. But there won't likely be any press about that, because it's not going to rise to the level of there was an arrest or there was a prosecution, because they may
or
not find the guy.
Didn't get hurt, right?
Yeah, nobody got hurt, but 2 to 4 million times a year. And when your liberal friends say, well, that's just not possible, you say, citizens, according to the Department of Justice, successfully stop crimes, usually against that citizen, twice as often as the cops stop crimes with pistols. And these I'll send it to you. Send me an email, talk@LarsLarson.com, and I'll be glad to send you the link and share it with your friends. But here's the argument for all those people who say, well, you have to be as well trained as the cops to be able to be trusted to defend yourself. No, the Department of Justice says this happens 2 to 4 million times a year. Now, I'll ask you a second question, John. If in those self-defense cases, obviously the vast majority involve no bullets fired, but in the ones where there is a bullet fired, you know, because that's a tiny minority of those 2 to 4 million per year that happen. Obviously, if the self-defense citizen accidentally hits a bystander, would you think that would become news?
Oh, big time.
Big time. So how often have you ever heard, with 2 to 4 million of these a year in the United States, how often have you ever heard of a self-defense situation in the news where a bystander was accidentally hit or killed? The answer is they do happen, but they are extraordinarily rare. So when your friends tell you, well, you've got to have specialized training, you say, well, somehow 2 to 4 million times a year this happens, and bystanders are not even routinely hit. It is so occasional that it's hard to find instances where it's happened, and you can guarantee that it would be a news story. But I appreciate the call from Auburn. Let's go to Ken in Spanaway. Hey, Ken, welcome to the Commute with Carlson, with Lars Larson standing in.
Good morning, Lars, and hopefully John's doing well on the mountain this morning. But I just wanted to say, like you had said, that kudos to the Pierce County Council for upholding the rights of these gun ranges to operate. And I can tell you, I live right between two of the major ones in Pierce County, and they're very respectful of when they're out there shooting, when they're making that noise. And I understand that people work all times of the day, and it may be noisy during the day, but I appreciate them upholding that. The other thing was about the $45 million lawsuit.
Yeah, what do you think? What do you think should a family? But I think the amount is kind of high. But what do you think a family should get, if anything, in compensation when the city of Seattle or the Seattle courts do not do their job and supervise this drunk driver, and he goes out and kills half a family?
Well, I think that the attorney's probably done some due diligence already and figured out the amount of this hospital stay and the care that's going to continue for this family. You know, I don't know, and I haven't heard recently, even if they've been discharged from the hospital, because I know the injuries were serious. But, you know, I don't think that the insurance company should have to suck up all of that cost, you know, and I certainly would think that the city being responsible for this, because they had every opportunity to stop this and go out and do something about this, failed to do so. I think they ought to pay whatever, you know, obviously the courts or the legal system comes up with, and I don't think that maybe $45 million in this day and time is too much to take care of that family for the rest of those two injured people's lives.
It may not. And by the way, since they're being, you know, they've got lawyers, chances are it's one of these contingency cases where the lawyers have to get a fee, so they take it on at no charge, and then they get a certain percentage of whatever is won. But that's the only way the average person could afford to fund, you know, a lawsuit like this. I think they're owed something, and I think it'd be interesting to see what has the Seattle City Council done in the way of trying to settle this rather than run it through the courts. And it would be an interesting question for the mayor and the city council to say, have you tried to settle this? Do you think? I mean, I understand they're in a position where their lawyers are telling them you can't talk, but I think it's a legitimate public policy issue to say, when you know that the city has screwed up and you know that they bear some responsibility for the terrible damage done to that family, do you think that there could be a good faith offer to that family to compensate them instead of having to take this through the courts and pay the lawyers a whole bunch of money? Ken, I appreciate the phone call. And Dave Workman, I appreciate you taking the time today. I've got a break, but I'll be back in just a second. I'll be glad to take more of your calls. It is The Commute with John Carlson. I'm Lars Larson standing in. 888-312-5757. I know, phone numbers, when you're getting old, they get hard to remember. 888-312-5757. Emails to talk at LarsLarson.com on Talk Radio 570 KBI.